This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
A numbers game here on VSiN. Matt Brown in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin. We have the pleasure of being joined right here on the desk by our very own Adam Burke, the jack of all trades. You want to talk baseball, you want to talk football, you want to talk basketball, you want to talk awesome bands and places to go eat around town. You got Adam Burke here on the desk, baby.
What's up, boys? How we doing?
Good, man. Feeling really, really good.
Is Texas Roadhouse one of those awesome places to eat around town?
Hey, listen.
How's their live music?
I'm going to say right quick. Don't talk about the rolls.
The rolls are great.
Yeah,
The butter too.
Yeah, the butter and the rolls. I mean, this is it. And also
dinner and a show usually too.
You have 30 minutes, by the way, to think of an odd running challenge for Greg Peterson, because we're all like he runs 12 miles a day and is now taking requests as to how to do that. And so yeah, we're coming up with some weird stuff that we can get him.
I will never get the taste of rolls like out of my mind for the end of time. I was telling Matt earlier, but I had in college. I had a friend who was a bartender at the Texas Roadhouse. So, you know, like every happy hour in Tallahassee started at 4 o'clock at that Texas Roadhouse.
Made a lot of Long Island iced teas in his career.
Yeah, that's right. That and we had a lot of rolls. So that's all I remember. Yeah.
All right, Adam. So,
by the way, are they a sponsor of the channel yet?
No, I mean,
at this point?
Yeah,
listen,
seriously.
Listen, we speak it into existence, right? More we talk about it, we speak it into existence here. So start with baseball. We'll get to football next segment, but looking over on the baseball side of things, I know that you are a Cleveland Guardians fan. We look at this AL Central. White Sox win again, now 2.5 games clear of this Guardians team that is 3-7 over their last 10, lost their last 5 as well. The Twins 3.5 back, and then you've got the Tigers sitting there after losing 2 in a row, now 6 games back with them. I was kind of saying with this Tigers team, this might be the most pivotal week in the history of their franchise, because like it's a franchise-altering week, right? Like, what do they end up doing with Scooble? Do they win 4 games and then next thing you know they got to keep him, or do they lose 4 games and they definitely got to dump him? What do you make of this division just kind of top to bottom here?
Well, top to bottom, the division's not very good, obviously. I mean, we could kind of say that about the AL West too. You know, that's another division that no one really stands out in that one. But yeah, I mean, look, I still think Detroit is very live to win this division. But they have to keep Scooble, you know, and I don't know if they're going to decide to do that or not. I mean, here's the thing, right? If you're Detroit, and you're kind of looking at the layout of the American League right now, who scares you, right? Maybe the Yankees do, I guess, especially if they get Aaron Judge back. And they've got great pitching. I mean, Cam Schlittler, now that Max Fried's back. But nobody else really scares me. You know, I mean, the Rays are very good. They've got very good starting pitching. I don't know how good that lineup is. Obviously, no one in the West scares you. Cleveland, Chicago, they don't really scare you either. Especially because Chicago's a very left-handed, heavy offensive team. They're going to have to make moves here this week. They need a right-handed bat or two. And they also need another starting pitcher and probably another back end of the bullpen option. I don't know how many of those are going to be available, how many of those boxes they can check. So if I'm Detroit and I start thinking about it, is it worth it for me to keep Scooble and go ahead and make a run at this thing when the AL is probably as wide open as it's been in a very long time? At the same time, you're probably getting, what, 2 or 3 blue chippy type of prospects for him. Very, very big week for them. Baltimore here for 3 at home. Then they go to Sacramento, play the A's for 3. I'm hoping they hold on to Scooble because I have a lot of preseason Tigers exposure.
You and me both. I don't know.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
It really is fascinating because I think, like, you're right, Adam, right? Like, it is light in the American League. You could see them working their way through. And then you're staring at division standings. They're fourth in their own division, in a division that we've been calling bad the whole year. So I don't know what the answer is here. And I guess we'll find out eventually. I think the one seed is getting interesting here, and I want to see if you have thoughts. Rays are -105 in this market now. I think I saw +120 on the Yankees earlier. Is that a bet on the Yankees? Do you think this Rays team comes back to the pack at some point in the regular season, or are they more a fade in the playoffs for you?
Well, that's a really good question. This year's Rays team sort of feels built to me like the Milwaukee Brewers are, where they're built to win over 162, and they're going to struggle when it comes playoff time because they're just not going to hit for enough power. You know, the playoffs is all about hitting for power. The run environment changes. A lot more strikeouts. Guys are throwing complete max effort, you know, all of that. So you got to hit home runs. I don't know that the Rays are going to be able to hit home runs in October, but their pitching staff is very, very good. And that's the area where they're looking to be very aggressive here at the trade deadline. They've been linked to the aforementioned Tarek Skubal because they also understand this situation, right? They have a new ownership group, too, that I think wants to really make a statement and kind of be aggressive here at the trade deadline. But they understand, like, when you're the Rays and your payroll is a third of what the Yankees is or lower, like, now is your chance, right? This is your year to really try to make an impact and go out there and do something. So we'll see how aggressive they are. The thing about a lot of these low payroll teams, they covet their prospects, right? Cleveland's not going to make an impact deal because they're not going to trade anybody who they think can help them down the line for, you know, for peanuts. It's going to be the same thing with the Rays. So are they going to be willing to give up what it takes to get an impact player? But I mean, Drew Rasmussen's been terrific. Shane McClanahan's, you know, five and fly, but he's very solid night in and night out. Caminero is your big home run hitter come playoff time. If they can find another bat that hits home runs from a platoon standpoint, makes them a lot more dangerous. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens here because there's a lot of buyers and like maybe four sellers that have things that people actually want.
When we look over in the NL, I think we've all, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody else, just basically kind of like crowning the Dodgers. But then you look at some of these teams, and when you get into a series where you can shrink the rotation and there's a small sample size here, and you look at a team like the Brewers that can go Miz, Harrison, Logan Henderson, then you look at a team like the Phillies that can go Wheeler and Sanchez, or a team like the Braves, or even a team a little bit further kind of down the line here in the Pirates, should they be able to make it in? And if you could go Skeens, if Jared Jones kind of pans out after he gets a little bit more, you know, his feet wet a little bit more, if you can go Skeens and you can go Jared Jones, maybe come back with Ashcraft or Bubba Chandler, something like that. I don't know for sure that the Dodgers are as unbeatable as maybe we try to make them out to be.
You know what? I want to agree with you because I think it's just very boring if they just go out there and win it again. But I mean, the way that they can use load management throughout the second half of the season, because they already had the division one pretty much, right?
Yes.
I don't think they care if they're the one seed, the two seed, the three seed. I don't think they care at all. I don't think it matters to them whatsoever. And they're going to go out there and get whatever they need to here, whatever they feel like they want to get at the trade deadline. So
now I will say this. If they end up with Skubal, then I'll just, I'll retract everything that I said.
And the sick thing is they can do that, right? I mean, obviously they spend a ton of money. Like, we know the financial imbalance of Major League Baseball and why we may not have a season next year, but their player development is so good that they can afford to trade away, you know, key blue chip types of prospects to go get a Skubal and be like, the hell with it. Let's just win another World Series. You know, so definitely a possibility here. I understand where you're coming from. I'm also still very worried that Jacob Mizorowski holds up for two more months plus the playoffs. I mean, this is a guy throwing harder than anyone we've ever seen, you know, right? Maybe you have stories about Nolan Ryan or whatever, Bob Feller, but like regularly sitting 103 plus, like that takes a toll, you know, for a guy who, I mean, he's not exactly like a, you know, stocky guy below the waist where he's throwing a lot with his legs on. It's a lot of arm action. So I hope he stays together, right, for the good of the league. But that would be the thing that would worry me about Milwaukee. You know, Logan Henderson is a walking injury risk. Kyle Harrison's already been hurt. Not that it was, you know, that big of an arm issue. But it's probably going to be the Dodgers again. And then it'll be more fuel for the lockout fire.
Want to seize on the Miz stuff here a little bit. This is MVP Cy Young, man. These are all getting interesting in every league. You've got Mizorowski's minus 300 now to win NL Cy Young. Which one of these is, I guess, most fascinating to you right now, Adam? Because I don't think any of these four are done, right?
Yeah, I don't think any of the four are done. I mean, because that's the thing, right? If he stays healthy, he wins the Cy Young, right? Like, there's absolutely no doubt about that. But I'm not convinced that he's going to stay healthy, you know, just because, again, I mean, he's doing things that we've never really seen before. And the thing about it, too, is teams like the Brewers, teams like the Rays, like, they know that the pitchers that they have a shelf life because they can't afford to pay them the exorbitant amount of money that they're going to get. You see a lot of those guys end up with arm injuries. There have been a lot of guys for the Tampa Bay Rays over the years that have had Tommy John surgery or some sort of other shoulder issue or something like that. So we'll see. I don't know if it's just a player development thing or whatever, but they're just like, you know what? We're going to get what we're going to get out of these guys because they're going to go somewhere else in free agency. I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways the awards markets can go here just because, again, it's really about staying healthy, right? Do the Astros trade Yordan Alvarez?
Right.
I mean, I would personally. I think that they need to tear that thing down and completely rebuild it. At the same time, again, we talked about it already, the AL is remarkably weak. Mm-hmm. But there's certainly a chance that Alvarez gets traded to the National League, and it wouldn't shock me at all. You know, if let's say the Dodgers, maybe, example, are like, oh, let's get this guy because we can. You know, so, yeah, I don't think any of these awards markets are done, even though we have some odds on favorites out there. I think there's still plenty of moving parts available.
Yeah, I said this yesterday. I actually think for the first time in a long time that Shohei is at least a little bit vulnerable because they've already decided they're not going to pitch. I don't think he's going to pitch again this season until the playoffs. And so, like, it seems like they're going to shelve him for the whole second half pitching wise. And, like, yeah, he's hitting well. I mean, but he is not, he's not hitting better than any of these other, you know, some of these other guys. I mean, like, not even arguably, like, PCA is having a better season than Shohei is. Like, there are guys that are having better seasons than Shohei.
Him skipping that bullpen session this week, I mean, was that it for you guys? Like, do we think this is done with Shohei now pitching?
Well, it's more what Dave Roberts said afterwards, which is, we are going to take this very, very, very cautiously because, which is like Adam said, they're coasting to the playoffs anyway. Yeah. They're 12 games up in the division. So, like, they're not going to pitch him if they don't have to.
Well, and not only that, like, at some point, you're going to have to do what's best for Shohei and just put him on the IL and let him get healthy. I mean, this is a guy, you look at his performance here in July, 224 average, 277 on base, 434 slugging, just an 82 WRC plus. So he's 18% below league average offensively in the month of July. So this knee thing is bothering him at the plate too. Like, at some point you just have to go, look, man, like, we get it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you want to be out there every day. Cool. But also, we're a million games up in the division already. Mm-hmm. Like, get healthy for when it matters.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to win another World Series. And I think
also, real quick, too, like, if there is some Shohei fatigue out there, the door is very much open now for the voters to go, well, he didn't pitch as much.
Yep.
Or, well, he wasn't very good, you know, in the summer when he was hurt. So, I think that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, as vulnerable as I've ever seen, I definitely think that that market is a lot to be said there. Another segment here with Adam Berg. Let's get into some football.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Rolling along here, Monday edition of A Numbers Game. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, Adam Burke still on the desk with us here for another one. We were sitting here talking on break, and guys, I think we might have talked ourselves into a couple of long shot bets here over in the National League MVP. Shohei Ohtani currently minus 220, but there are some, you know, really long shot guys that it is not out of the realm of possibility for them to get home. And we were talking about the Miz, and Adam did a little bit of quick research on break. And Adam, you found like a very comparable season to what Clayton Kershaw had as MVP and possibly could top the season that Clayton Kershaw had.
So it's, I'm not going to say it's impossible for a pitcher to win MVP. Shohei Ohtani is the last pitcher the last three times to do it, but also, you know, he's a two-way player and a unicorn. Clayton Kershaw, 2014, 21-3 record. Mizorowski's not going to get to 21 wins, I don't think, but I don't think he has to. 177 ERA for Kershaw, 239 strikeouts, and 198 and a third innings pitched. Mizorowski has 180, 185 in 120 innings. Prior to that, Justin Verlander, 251 innings back in 2011, 250 strikeouts, 24-5. We'll never see a record again.
Yes, yeah.
But Mizorowski, if he continues on the pace he's on now, he has comparable enough statistics to Kershaw in 2014, Verlander 2011 to win MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not Ohtani, if Ohtani misses a month or whatever, right? I mean, who's it going to be? Because James Wood is up there at 28-1. If the Nationals don't make the playoffs, he doesn't win MVP.
Yep.
And it's the same thing with CJ Abrams at 100-1. Like, Mizorowski, if you want to gamble on the health, I think the MVP is the way to do it.
Yeah, it's super, super interesting. Yeah, and again, I know people are going to talk about PCA. The only reason we're skipping over him, remember, PCA had a monster first half last year as well and then completely collapsed in the second half. So can he keep it up? If he does, sure. If it's not Shohei, it'd probably be him. But we are, look, we're talking about putting in lottery tickets here that could end up monetizing. So could be interesting. Glad to have Adam on the desk here. Reminder, by the way, we do have the NFL betting guide already out over at VSiN.com. We are coming out with a college football betting guide. We are going to update the NFL betting guide as well. You can get all of that for everything that we do now until the end of the Super Bowl for $175. So go in, VSiN.com/subscribe right now for everything over at VSiN.com. So add a real quick on the NFL betting guide side of things. When are we getting the update there on that thing to be the end of training camp? Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, Monday, August 31st.
Okay.
So what is that? 5 weeks from today? 4 weeks from today? Yeah. Something like that. So we'll get that out on Monday, August 31st. You know, that's a post preseason look where are there some significant injuries, right, that we need to think about and account for? And really, I think the biggest thing with the updated NFL guide, the 2.0, the refresh, whatever you want to call it, is that when we put out our first NFL guide in June, yeah, we have some futures thoughts and all those kinds of things, but our hosts and our writers and contributors are really dialed in on the NFL by that point. So you're going to get a lot of best bets, you know, in that updated NFL betting guide. So that'll come your way Monday, August 31st. And we're a week away from the college football betting guide, Monday, August 3rd. So very excited to have that one out 7 days. Well, basically 6 days from now. Usually we get them out kind of the night before and have them posted and everything like that. So that one will be ready for you next Monday.
Yeah, as Matt often says, the most helpful betting guide out there for myself and he. I could at least tell you that. And you know what, Adam? I think I was more helpful with the college football betting guide this year than Matt Brown, because I heard he just wrote LSU in for the answer for everything.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm going to change my answer.
I might leave it like that just for the fun of it. Just like sometimes when Paulie Howard sends in his picks, we just leave them in all caps just to be on brand with him. But look, I will say this. Not only the most important guide, I think, for a lot of our hosts, but also the most important guide for our VSiN Pro subscribers, right? I mean, the college basketball guide is bigger, but certainly not as big of a sport as college football is from a betting standpoint. Sorry, Greg Peterson. This was a really important one because there's so much movement in the transfer portal. I mean, it's ridiculous nowadays how many guys transfer multiple times. Then you got 35 new head coaches this year, a couple guys with the interim tag stripped off, a lot of new coordinators. Teams in different conferences. I mean, Sacramento State is playing in the MAC. Northern Illinois is playing in the Mountain West. Like, things that make no sense whatsoever, but they're happening this season.
Yeah.
Texas State in the Pac-12. All of these things are really important to know as you head into the season. And also, there's a lot more uncertainty, right? I mean, the NFL market, everybody knows all the players. Everybody knows all the teams. The sports books have a good idea from all their, you know, futures exposure in the summer, stuff like that. College football is a much higher variance environment early on. So if you can have some edges and some advantages, personally for me, especially in the group of six conferences, I think you can make a lot of good money early on in the college football season, and this guide will set you up for the possibility to do that.
Very interested in a lot of people's Heisman opinions as well. If we look at the top of the board, it's going to be the names that you've heard that might go at the top of the NFL draft, your CJ Carrs and Arch Mannings and Dante Moores and stuff. That being said, we see this with the Heisman Trophy more times than you want to even think about, which is guys kind of coming out of nowhere and playing themselves into position here. And there are a lot of different guys, and I'm not not a talent evaluator, but I do listen to these dudes that are talking about guys that could play their way into the discussion to potentially be a top five pick, maybe even be a number one overall pick. Remember, Fernando Mendoza came out of nowhere. Joe Burrow came out of nowhere. Like, these are dudes that were like day two, day three picks that played their way into the top of the draft and certainly into the Heisman Trophy discussion. So you start to look a little bit further down the board, and I will be interested to see what people think of your Sam Levitts and your, you know, Jaden Maiavas, and then your crazier, longer shot guys than even that, Mestemaker and all these guys that could honestly play their way into a discussion of being a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. And with that, also get yourself into the Heisman discussion.
Yeah. And so Zachary Cohen is the one who did our Heisman article for the College Football Betting Guide. It is done. Obviously we just need to get it in the guide, but a couple of interesting notes from him here. One of them being that the preseason favorite hasn't won the Heisman since 2014. Mm-hmm. So that adds a lot of credence to what you were saying, right? And this year you look at it, and I mean, if Notre Dame doesn't go 12-0 in the regular season, it's a disappointment.
Yeah.
I mean, their schedule is bad. I have them an 8.5-point favorite over everybody this season, or at least higher than that, which includes the game against Miami. CJ Carr makes sense, right? I mean, you go 12-0, you're the quarterback of a 12-0 team. Like, you know, it's hard for people not to vote for you, but again, the favorite usually doesn't win this thing. Like you said, it's somebody who kind of comes out of nowhere. The Alabama quarterback battle is a really big one, right? If Keelan Russell ends up getting it, there's probably good value on him at 28-1. Austin Mack is 65-1 if he ends up playing a lot. The one guy that I kind of think is interesting, and I don't know how this is going to work out, but I think this is kind of the dart throw that I would take, would be Byron Brown at Auburn at 50-1, right? He's got a bunch of his USF guys with him. He's got his head coach and Alex Golish. The defense is good at Auburn year in and year out. They kept the same coordinators. So, like, if this offense is good, the defense should be good. This could be a 10-win type of team where Brown's a legitimate dual-threat guy.
Yeah.
So maybe he's a guy that you could kind of take a look at 50-1. But, yeah, I mean, look, again, it's maybe somebody who's not even a starter right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a couple of other names that just, again, are kind of showing up in some people's mock drafts. And these are just to put on your radar in case you like to build a portfolio of long shots. Remember DJ Lagway? Remember him? He's at Baylor now. And so he is a guy that is, again, they're talking if he could ever live up to the talent of the physical abilities and things like that. He's like 100-1 to win. You have Lenore Sellers at South Carolina, another guy who's I've seen as high as drafted in the top 10 in some of the mocks and things. Again, got to live up to the physical talents and all of that, but he's out at 45-50-1, something like that for the Heisman. So these are, if you like to build those kind of long shot portfolios, right, there are dudes that at least the physical ability is there. They just got to show it on the field.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Yeah. And again, I mean, it's very difficult early on in the season because these rosters are effectively brand new at a lot of these schools, right? So it's just a matter of who's going to gel the quickest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen transfer quarterbacks do really, really, really well in terms of the Heisman, in terms of winning national championships, stuff like that. So, you know, those guys seem to be fitting in very, very quickly with their new teams. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just because they're older guys and have played a lot of college football. I think it's going to be one of the reasons why Darian Mensah is super attractive to people at 12-1. Not to mention, Miami's an odds-on favorite to win the ACC. I personally like Clemson at 14-1. So maybe Chris Vezina, their quarterback, at 125-1 for Heisman. Like, not the worst dart throw in the world with Chad Morris. Now back there is the OC. So, yeah, there are a lot of things that you can kind of start formulating in your mind here, looking at some of the long shots, even though, yeah, if Notre Dame goes 12-0, like CJ Carr should win it.
Well, can you whittle it down even more? I think there's the, I mean, you got a couple talented wide receivers on that first page, too. Are you only looking quarterback at this point in the season?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the NFL MVP where it's basically quarterback or bust.
Especially considering the crop that we have this year as well. It's just, I just don't know. I don't know how one of these dudes doesn't just light it up so incredible.
And I think another guy who's going to get a lot of love here, and throwing another shout out to Zach, who wrote the Big 12 up for our college football betting guide, Connor Wegman at Houston. A lot of people are looking at Houston as a team that could actually win the Big 12 this year. Their schedule is very, very soft. A lot of returning production. Willie Fritz is a good head coach. Connor Wegman's a guy that I think is going to start to get some love early on in the season. And that's another thing, too, that you got to keep in mind. Like, the time that you want to go in and fire on these guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, somebody with a super, super soft schedule early on is going to put up numbers. Somebody who has a brutal first weekend game, that's a coin flip, something like that, they lose that game, all of a sudden their price is shooting up. So that's something you want to keep in mind, too. The market entry point for the Heisman, for any kind of future, is critically important.
Adam and his team doing yeoman's work over there on VSiN.com. So go in right now. 175, everything we do now through the Super Bowl. That includes the already published NFL betting guide that we will update at the end of training camp. And, of course, the soon-to-come college football betting guide as well. Adam, appreciate the time, buddy, as always. Sir. And you and the guys, keep it up over there at VSiN.com.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Monday, Numbers Game, Matt Brown in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin on the desk. A guy we're just talking about, Daniel Jones, sitting here chopping it up with McAfee. He's probably saying, I've never felt better. You know what they say.
Looks great, man.
They never feel bad. They never look bad. He's in the best shape of his life. I'm coming back. I'm 110%. Like everybody, always.
I always like you've brought this up before. The best example really is fight camps.
Yeah.
Like, how's your fighter looking?
That's why it was so refreshing the other day. I was like, certainly I'm reading this wrong. Where Tyreek Hill was like, my leg just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like whatever. Yeah. I'm like, no one says that. Like, no one is honest about their rehab when it's going poorly. And he's just like, my leg just doesn't work at all.
Yeah, that was a little spooky, though. I have no power in my leg whatsoever. Like, okay, that doesn't sound ideal. Yeah.
His agent's going, what are you doing? Shut up.
Yeah.
Come on, man. We could have gotten one more contract out of this thing, but instead, he's like, no, my left leg doesn't work. I was like, that's done. Your career's over, buddy. Oof. That's all there is. Now joining us on the guest line, kind enough, as he's taking a little respite there, Tom Burning. Find him over on Mad Dog Sports Radio at One Tom Burn on the Twitter machine. Tom, appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, no worries, guys. Little beach time, but it's hot. I'm also you know, betting some tennis. I got to make sure that Tabilo, you want to do the names for me, Kelly? I know you're great at that.
Cabillo, right? I could see that one in front of my eyes. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, we're going to obviously start here with LeBron and the 76ers thing. And I guess first off, when you were kind of handicapping where you thought LeBron was going to end up, where did the Sixers kind of fall on the pecking order for you?
Not at the top. I had Cleveland for months. I do wonder if they had not moved Darius Garland, who's a clutch character. I mean, the bottom line is, I don't know that he wants to play with James Harden. And we could all say what we want about Harden. He's a top 50, at worst, 75 player in history of the sport, not even debatable. LeBron doesn't want it out there that he doesn't want to play with him. But I got to wonder if that's one of the reasons he's not in Cleveland. Miami was always a clunky fit. You're not winning anything there. But the one thing I appreciate about this decision, and I was shocked to answer your question, is he is inviting all the pressure because he has built up zero equity in Philadelphia. Okay, he loses in Miami, no big deal. He brought them two chips. You lose even in Cleveland. He delivered the first for that town in 51 years, the homegrown son coming back. He hasn't built up anything in Philly. Philly's had plenty of superstars. The Sixers have had five of the top 25 players in the history of the sport. So he actually has to do a little something in Philadelphia he would not have to do in theory in Cleveland or Miami. So it works both ways. A lot of people are saying he's chasing another ring. Absolutely. But at the same time, he is inviting more pressure in doing so.
Yeah, Tom, this is I think Philadelphia has made this more fascinating for me to continue to talk about than I thought it was going to be wherever LeBron decided on where he'd go. I think the one I keep thinking about for the past few days, biggest loser for you in all of this, team, player, anything. Is there anybody who jumps to mind? Because I think there's probably a few candidates you could go with here.
I would probably say Cleveland again. I think if they would have just held down the fort and kept Garland, maybe I'm wrong, but that's just my suspicion. You know, they went all in on a team that you cannot trust. That was their biggest issue. Two soft bigs, they've told us. They're not great at the big spot. The backcourt, you know, your turn, my turn. They bring in James Harden, of all people. That didn't make sense to rectify the situation. And I'm not a Harden hater at all, but it makes sense for him to go home. I think he was touched by the standing ovation that Bronny got when he went back to Cleveland this past year. Maybe I'm dead wrong, but I do think the biggest loser's got to be Cleveland. Miami, but, you know, they did get Giannis at least. They're not winning a championship, though, so they're still a loser if you consider the LeBron situation, where it appeared for about 48 hours, if you looked at the Kalshier Polymarket numbers, that he was going to be a member of Miami Heat.
Tom, whenever we take a look at the Sixers, I think even without LeBron, we were going to be talking about them as potential title contenders, but you add LeBron in there. Where do they fall now in your eyes as far as, you know, getting it done and getting over the hump?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Listen, you can't bet any futures Philly-related right now. You missed the boat, quite obviously. I think if you're a modeler, you know, you're not going to be blown away. I mean, the bottom line is we know the Celtics have told us a million times that Jaylen Brown is not quite as good as people think. They told us that by what they accepted in the trade. And now we're hearing all this about, he's not an efficient player, which is true. If you look at Darko estimated plus minus predictive metrics, they think it's laughable, those metrics, that he was even in the equation for an MVP, and they do, in fact, like Derek White better. Now, take that for what it's worth. By the way, speaking of those metrics, LeBron James' spread value was about 68 last year. Now, those numbers could change based on circumstance, obviously. But Nick Nurse has his hand pretty full, okay, because the bottom line is Jaylen Brown's favorite season was a season where he got to have the highest usage rate. He could be fourth in line some nights, so I love the talent, and I get it's the NBA. It typically does come down to talent. But the fit still needs to be decided. Who's sacrificing? Who's the Chris Bosh on the Sixers? You can't be running to take any Sixers futures. As a fan, I can't wait. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not looking to open a sports book. At this point, you missed the boat.
Yeah, Tom, I think I'm right there with you. I think I will wait and see on this team a little bit. I do think they belong right at the top, but how's it all going to work? It's going to be fun to watch. I think we've had this whole arms race in the Eastern Conference with a lot of these teams adding. Is there? We've just had win totals come out most places here over like the past week or so. I made a couple bets. Is there anybody in the East that, man, I cautioned, Matt and I were talking about earlier, caution just any over that you're going to go bet, because I think there's a lot of teams that are going to make significant improvements. Any teams in the East that you're maybe looking to fade, go against this year, where an under on the win total would make sense?
Yeah, it's a great question. Now, full disclosure, World Cup. Now looking into the NFL, college football, doing a lot of extra tennis, which I haven't done in the past. I have not done as much of this as I typically would at this point, but that's a great question. One team that would stick out a little bit to me right out of the chute would be Detroit. Now, I'd have to see what that number looks like.
50 and a half.
They have not had a great offseason. You understand that part of it. I think everybody does. We know their number is not going to be too high, relatively speaking, but that's a team that's obviously a regression candidate. I thought they played a little over their head, and they'll probably still be a regular season warrior this year to an extent. But that would be one team I would have circled, if you will, to maybe be looking at an under.
Tom, let's take a shift here to the NFL. This is the time of year where I think a lot of people start looking in that direction. Certainly people in our business, as we're coming down to the stretch here in baseball season, and of course we're starting to get the training camp footage and all that. We get the juices get flowing with all of that. As you kind of look here early on, is there a team that has really piqued your interest above all else?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'll tell you right out of the chute, it's not going to be the Bengals. I mean, it's getting a little too trendy right now with the Cincinnati love. I think it's a little over the top. I, too, love Burrow. Don't get me wrong. But I think he's been a little overrated over the years. I mean, they have awful defenses. I love the offense, and I think you're a big fan, Matt. Are you not? Don't get me wrong. I like Burrow. But, you know, considering the rest of the roster, and they're stacked at some fun fantasy-type positions, but I can't run to take the Bengals at anything less than 20-1, and I don't think you could even find better than that at this point. So I guess to answer your question, you know, I would look a little further down the board. I don't trust Herbert. I know some people will go there. You know, Chiefs are a little bit more viable than they've ever been. I would look a little further down to a couple NFCs. I'd look at Detroit and Philly. I think Philly's been a little disrespected, especially at the quarterback position. Maybe I'm being a homer. Jalen Hurts wins a lot of big games. You could say what you want. I think A.J. Brown is pretty much addition by subtraction at this point. I expect the defense to be a little bit more stout. I like the Eagles and some of the prices you get on them. And I would even go to fighting Dan Campbell's. You know, look, at some point, Detroit's going to have to show that the window's not closed. We're all down on them after last season. I understand that. Watch them have a little bit of a bounce back when maybe you're not expecting it, because they seem to be a little down the line, obviously, in the NFC pantheon if you look at some of the prices. So those are two teams with not long prices necessarily, but still a decent return that I'm circling here early and have some interest in.
Tom, there's a lot of big names at the top of the MVP board. Burrow, you kind of just talked about a little bit. Is there anybody that you'd look to make a bet, maybe a longer shot bet on at this point in the season, or is this going to be a hold firm as you head into the season?
Oh, that's a good one. The MVP market is interesting. Again, you know, let me look at some of those markets, some of the numbers I could get. But, you know, look, Lamar, Josh Allen, I mean, they're going to be so short. You probably want to look a little further down the board. Is there somebody who's going to stick out a little bit more than anybody else, plays the quarterback position? I think he'd be nuts to go Drake May. I've heard a little bit of that. I don't buy no Gill. Cover your ears. He has Jaden Daniels already in the Hall of Fame with the bust already done. I'm not going Daniels. I still think he's got a little bit more something to prove. You know, it's a great question. No, I'll go right back to Detroit. I didn't realize even before the interview I was this into Detroit, but now you got me thinking a little bit. I'll take Jared Goff. You know, when Jared Goff, you've heard this a million times, is inside on that turf, man. There aren't many people who could be more efficient. I still think they have enough around them offensively. I know people were a little down on the play calling situation last year. I think that'll be rectified to an extent this year. I think the numbers are always going to be there for Goff. Fast track, what the hell. I'd have to look at exactly where I could get that number, but last I checked, it's at least playable.
Yeah, 35-1 over at DraftKings.
There we go. Okay. Look at that.
Yeah, it's playable.
He is Tom Byrne. Find him over on Mad Dog Sports Radio. One Tom Byrne over on the Twitter machine. Get you some rest and relaxation there, buddy. Appreciate you carving out some time for us.
Anytime, fellas. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
So there it is. It just said on the bottom of the screen there on the lower third, Daniel Jones. He is a full go. And we'll be back at training camp as a full go.
Good for him. Pretty incredible, man. Some of the
Shoot these guys up with these days?
Medical advancements, man. It is
I mean,
wild.
Everyone's back at camp. Everyone's a full go. Everyone's going to be as good as we've ever seen. So Daniel Jones, a full go there for the Colts in training camp. Unbelievable. Put a bow on this one when we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Monday edition of A Numbers Game. Matt Brown in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin on the desk with me here. And boy, show's already over. Can you believe that?
Time flies when you're having fun.
I mean, just a banger of a show here. Want to appreciate all the guests that we had here. So tip of the old cap to Adam Burke, Tom Byrne for being down on the beach and making some time for us.
Yeah, we're bugging him on the beach, man. Yeah, thanks, Tom. I didn't know that.
And then, of course, Greg Peterson, who joins the program each and every week. We get to his five plays that we highlighted. Likes the Pirates on the money line and the over. I'm actually on the over as well in that game. But he likes the Pirates on the side as well. I couldn't quite get there with that, but do think that we have a couple of pitchers that can give it up. Certainly guys that are on the decline from where they have been on the entire season. So I did like the over there as well. So a full-throated agreement with Greg there on the over on the nine. And he also likes the Pirates there. You got to pay on the money line about a minus 125-ish, 130-ish favorite, something like that. And that's where Greg's at.
Yep. Nationals money line for him as well. Braves, Mets over 8. Yankees, White Sox under 8.5. Those are all ones that we discussed today on A Numbers Game. But guess what? It's Greg Peterson. That means there's plenty more than just 5 picks. Go to VSiN.com. Check it out.
There are going to be more than 5 picks. There's no doubt about that. I just got a push notification. Greg was about to have a heart attack, but we're okay. It's the Cracker Barrel CEO that's stepping down. It is not the Texas Roadhouse, but the Cracker Barrel CEO is stepping down. So there's that.
I wonder what he did. Not make bad food.
I mean,
I like Cracker Barrel, man. It's been a while. That's a good spot.
Ooh, yeah. Rolls versus biscuits. That's basically a
Cracker Barrel biscuits.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that. That's
biscuits and gravy, man.
That's big time. So like I said, I'm on the over in the Pirates, but it's okay. In that one, over the 8.5 there. In that one, the Orioles and Tigers first five under of 4.5. That one's going to cost you a little bit, kind of like 117, 118, something like that. But again, these are two pitchers that are actually on heaters right now, and the teams can't hit. So that's kind of a great combination that we want for an under there. Keeter Montero, Kyle Bradish. Looking really good there, so I do like that. And then I'm also playing the Red Sox.
And it's a game
Sox.
7 again. Remember, yes. It's a game 7, so unders in game 7s.
I'm also playing the Red Sox run line here against the A's. This A's team is absolutely falling apart. They are, over their last 30 games, they've only won a handful of them. And then on top of that, your star player, the one guy that has been the kind of the linchpin for the team, is now on the sidelines, likely for the entire season, in Shea Langeliers. So I believe that this team, and Peyton Tolley, by the way, if you haven't really kind of paid attention to what he's been doing, guy's been dealing. And you kind of look at his last three starts, we're talking like a sub-2 expected ERA out of Peyton Tolley. We're talking about a 35% K rate. And he's one of these weird dudes that has the reverse splits. And so he actually is worse against lefties than he is against righties, even though he's left-handed. You look at this lineup and there's nobody. I mean, Kurtz is back, but Kurtz was really struggling even before he went on the IL for this A's team. So there's nobody you really fear on the left side anyway with the A's. So I'll go ahead and just lay him on the run line because it's like 166, 168, 170, something like that. I don't like to pay that. I just think they can get it done here by 2 runs. So it did take the money, the run line there for the Red Sox in that late game against the A's.
Are you play more money lines than run lines in baseball? I know it's a more loaded question than not. But
usually, and honestly, I'll look for.
I ask that only because I feel like I don't see Matt play that many run lines, but they're wrong.
There's kind of got to be a kind of a formula there. Like I said, I only play run lines on road teams. Also, I like it in what I consider to be higher scoring environments too, because I need to win by 2 runs.
Right.
You know, so I want it to be against a pitcher that I do believe. Like, I'm never going to take a run line, even if I like a road team, in a game where it's two good pitchers going at each other. Because, like, you know, there's just too much variance with all that. So I kind of like what I feel to be a good scoring environment, which it should be over in Sacramento. By the way, this is Boston in Sacramento against a guy in Jack Perkins that has been giving it up left and right. So that's kind of like the formula there for whenever I get to one of those.
I like that. I remember, you know, back when I was betting way more baseball, it was always the take the run line. We would have some of those great pitchers, and those totals would be 6, 6 and a half, and be like, 1.5 is worth so much. Amazing. In that situation. Okay, NBA win totals for me. Went over 3 of these last week. Tom brought it up. Pistons under 50.5. That was one of the first ones that I made. Jazz over 35.5 wins. That's going to be a popular one here. I think circa opened at 39, and I think it got bet down to 38, actually. So that's going to be a fun one to watch here throughout the summer. Rockets over 47.5. And then the one I added this weekend, Matt, Bulls, I missed the best of it. This opened like 24.5. I still don't think it's high enough. 28.5. I said it earlier. I think you got to be careful with any of these teams you're talking yourselves into overs on in the Eastern Conference, and especially if you're looking at the bottom of the East like I am. But man, this Bulls team, I think there's some talent that's being slept on here a bit. You got Modest Bozelis, who's really going to continue to be a point of development for this team. Josh Giddey, who I don't trust at all in the playoffs. And if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder, you get him out of town. He's not going to help your team, but for a Bulls team that just needs scoring and someone to get everything into motion, I think Giddey works well for him. We've seen him there the past couple years fitting that role. They add Norman Powell. Well, I guess we'll see if he's there for the entirety of the season. But then Caleb Wilson coming in too, who I think everybody's a little bit excited about as a rookie this year. Man, I think this is a really good starting lineup. I think there's some questions on the bench, but the starting lineup is not really matching 28 wins for me. So I went over 28.5 this weekend. Four NBA win totals for me. All those up at VSiN.com.
One more that we talked about here on the show. This isn't one that I made today, as is previously made, but while we continue the discussion, I did bet the Broncos in the AFC West. I like the body of that. I honestly, like top to bottom, I like the body of that roster.
Yeah.
Better than I like any other team in there. Listen, you can put the Raiders to the side. They're not in contention here. So it's a one of three. And I understand that Patrick Mahomes is superhuman. You still got to look around. And when I say talent that he's dealing with, it's more like lack of talent that he's dealing with that he still has to. I mean, I know Kelsey's coming back and this might be the farewell tour and all the things like that. But Kelly, you just look around and it's like there's no true real number one there. I mean, Worthy is not a true real number one. Rice is not a true real number one. Thornton isn't either. Yeah, you bring in Ken Walker, and I think that's a great addition. Certainly better than what they've been dealing with for the last few years. But Kelsey showed lots of signs of aging last year. He has fallen not completely off the cliff, but one leg is hanging off. And I just wonder if this might be where not so much a sad season for Kelsey, where we look and we just go, oh man, look at him just dad running out there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you've seen the tight ends that get a little bit later in the career and they just dad run, you know, like it just looks like the dad that's out there playing with the
Jason Witten that one's always going to Zach Ertz.
If close your eyes, picture Jason Witten, that's a dad runner, right? Like, so like that's what a dad runner is. And so, yeah, Kelsey kind of getting to that point as well. And then I said, I could be wrong about the Chargers. I need to see it with my eyes first.
Yeah.
And since I have not seen it manifest, and I have seen it with this Broncos team, Broncos the pick for me, especially being the third shot in the division, in which I actually have them probably the most talented in the division.
Yeah, I lean that way. Not a bet for me. Maybe it will be before the season, but I don't think so. I think I'm going to wait on that. Any other AFC West related bets that you've thought of? And the one that I'm kind of bringing up, because I actually don't have anything with that division. But rookie of the year, where do you land with Mendoza versus kind of the rest of the guys at the top of the board?
So this is the only year in rookie of the year that I'm actually looking at running backs or even wide receivers and stuff like that. Because like I said, I don't think Mendoza is going to play enough get it.
So there's value on the board now.
Yeah. Like I think that Jadarian Price is fairly interesting so the update actually came out yesterday that it was a very rah-rah, hey, we love Zach Charbonnet. He's putting in the hard work and everything's great. And, you know, we can't, blah, blah, blah. No timetable for his return. You know, like that was like the end of that, right? And so that typically means pretty far down the list there for him.
That jumped out to me, too. I like Mendoza could be great. I just think we laid it out earlier, right? Like, I don't think there's a rush to get him in there.
I don't think he plays until like week 12, 13. Something.
I mean, if you're looking to bet him, I definitely am not looking at betting him right now. That's for sure.
If you're watching us on the screen right now and you want to see more of us, because Kelly Bidlin also in the quest for $18.7 million.
Let's go.
We have some fun stuff going on over there in this documentary. Episode 1 is out now over on the VSiN YouTube channel. New episodes every single Wednesday. You can not only find it on the YouTube channel, but if you want to watch it live on the big screen or something, we're on Nesson, we're on MSG, we're on Game Plus up in Canada, some other networks to follow. So Catch that all over there. But it's fun kind of tracking not only the quest for $18.7 million, but the initial season of Grandissimo, the 69 entries that made the $6.9 million prize pool in the 100K buy-in contest. Are we hopping in this year or what? Are we just what did we decide?
I think you need Ben Coles to win another tournament before we decide?
We're gonna not do that. How many entries for you in Survivor this year?
I think I'll stick with my three.
Okay.
Yeah, been going three different paths. I think that's where I'll be going.
I think you got to bump it up to four.
To four? Okay.
Yeah. I think you got to bump it up to four. I think.
Well, do that.
Well, if you hated this, don't tune in tomorrow. I'll be back. But here until Thursday with Kelly Bidlin, an absolute blast. Thanks, everybody behind the glass, and, of course, all of the guests that joined us as well. Good luck on all your bets.